Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is Thursday, February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. I wanted to make sure that I noted my vice chair, Senator Mick Costello, is here, as well as Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Bishop, and Senator Birch. So thank you all for being on time. And, of course, myself, Chair Reinbold. Everybody knows to disable their cell phones. We go over that every time. I really want to thank my staff who worked so hard to pull this committee together and get you all everything you need and then upload it for the people on basis. It's a lot of work, and I really appreciate her help. And Nancy, thank you so much for being here with your great experience. And Madison, the LAO operator, that was a pretty challenging day on Tuesday, and you guys did a great job. So I want to today's a kind of a fun day. We decided to make it kind of an interesting, a little bit more lighthearted day today. So our first order of business today, we will be hearing from Nolan Clauda. He's the Executive Director for Center for Economic Development, and he's going to really be focusing on highlighting the fact that Alaska is number one in the nation for women-owned employee firms. Finally, we have a good statistics in Alaska, so I'm really, really excited to have a real positive example in Alaska, and I hope that continues. So we're really looking forward to that, so we'll be calling up in just a moment. But I wanted to say we're also planning on taking up the Alcohol Control Board appointee Charlie Cross from Nome and the Marijuana Control Board appointee Christopher. And I'm not sure if it's Jamie or Jamie. We will find out when he gets online, but we will if public testimony allows. And I know it was on the agenda for SB 16, but the committee substitute was not ready. So we're actually going to be doing that on Tuesday. That's the Save the Fair is what people are calling that bill. But that will be before the committee, and we're hoping to get it out of committee on Tuesday if it's the will of the body. With that, we're going to go ahead and call up Nolan, if you could come, and put your name and your affiliation, you know the drill, on the record. And thank you for being here today. We really appreciate it. We put you first because you traveled.
Thank you very much. I certainly appreciate this invitation, Senator Reinbold, and the committee today to come and speak to you. I am Nolan Clauda. I'm the Executive Director of the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development. So what I was asked to speak about today with this group is some of our work, the work that our Center for Economic Development, which is one of the programs at the UAA Business Enterprise Institute, we've worked on a series of studies in the last year that highlight entrepreneurship, the economic importance of it, how entrepreneurship contributes to job growth in the state. We also looked at women in entrepreneurship and some of the demographic elements, and we did this emerging sector series of reports that were attempting to highlight areas of the state economy that have high growth potential that entrepreneurs show interest in. And so our center, you know, we get to work in projects like this where we're doing applied research. We are also on the side where we put into place programs and provide services to entrepreneurs, to folks that are starting businesses. And so we get to be both the generators of information and research, and we like to take that research and use it to help inform our programming. And so everything I'm talking about today isn't designed to kind of live on a shelf, but is designed to help us implement our programming, and I think we'll be able to talk through some examples of that as we go along. And I also wanted to mention, too, that I know that in the last session, 2019 was proclaimed to be the year of innovation. And so I think that that's something that proclamation that I know Senator Costello took some leadership in is something that's very much on our thoughts. And I think that in the spirit of the year of innovation helps to shape some of this work that we're offering today. So I think probably by now the committee has seen some of the information from the Department of Labor about the overall picture of where Alaska is. It seems that we're coming out of recession. We're expecting probably positive job growth this year, although we've had declining jobs for the last few years, you know, as we've been in a recession since around 2015. So if we look at the snapshot of time, the year prior to the first quarter of 2018, you know, the overall state economy lost about 1,600 jobs in that time. Startup businesses, new businesses being started in Alaska, and we're talking about employer businesses. They have to be businesses that have at least one paid employee that has IRS W-2. Those new businesses being started added over 5,000 jobs in that same time period. And I think that shows a little bit about the importance of how, even when the state economy overall might be contracting, the startups that are forming are still doing a lot of heavy lifting when it comes to creating jobs and prosperity in the private sector. So, you know, what does the big picture look like when it comes to new businesses being started? Generally, for the last several years, you know, roughly 1,000 employer businesses are started in Alaska each year. You know, the state overall has in the ballpark, depending on what source of information you're looking at, between 17 or 18,000 private businesses that have employees. So around 1,000 are getting started each year, and of course there's an attrition rate as some businesses close or exit. But from looking at the numbers, it looks as though about 1,100 new firms were added to the economy in 2018. What's interesting about this, to me at least, as somebody who watches, you know, the economic trends and the data, is that you know, if we've been in a recession for about the last 3 years, and yet we don't see that that's depressed the number of new firms being started, which is something that is somewhat interesting. Why that might be the case. We also see that those firms that were started, each firm that starts in Alaska adds between, you know, it usually starts with between 4 or 5 jobs, right? And so that amounted to over 5,000 jobs in 2018. And this is really between, it's the year prior to March of 2018 is the data source that we're using here. So added about 5,000 jobs in that time, in a time when the state economy overall was losing jobs. You know, again, we don't see a clear, you know, downward or upward trend in these numbers, which is in itself quite interesting. So you know, this, but what's interesting about the way that the economy works, I'm looking at this graph is looking at about 10 years of data averaged out over before there was a statewide recession, the number of jobs that were created in the private sector, as well as the number of jobs that were lost in the private sector. If you take out the startup businesses, those that are less than a year old, and you just look at the existing businesses, how many of them hired and expanded versus how many closed or contracted, the number of jobs added is almost equal to the number of jobs created, right? So there's this kind of churn that happens in the economy each year. A lot of businesses expand and add jobs to their payroll. At the same time, a lot of businesses contract, some close. The net effect of that is usually that it's about a wash if we don't include any of the new businesses starting. The startup businesses are the ones that add that net margin of new jobs to the economy. They are the ones that almost by definition, you know, they're starting from nothing and they're growing, whereas other businesses, you know, start from a certain number, they could either decline or raise. So this is why you often hear stats about the importance of startups to job creation, that startups are really the major sources of new jobs being added to the private economy each year. When we're not in a recession, when we are, you know, in fact adding jobs, 5,000 jobs per year is about the number of jobs that we added each year before we were in a recession, and that's about the number of jobs startups add each year. So it is something that's pretty important that I personally don't think always gets enough attention when we talk about the state economy. Yes.
I think I like to take questions when it's a more laid back presentation. So you mind taking a question from Senator Birch?
Oh, absolutely. I would be happy to.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was kind of thumbing ahead here. Just when the slide that you had, the additional startup, do you have a sense for, I mean, are those food trucks? Are they a tourism business? Are they, new engineering companies? Do you have a sense for if there's 5,000 jobs created by startups? You know, do you have a flavor, or is it just across the board, or can you kind of pigeonhole like 20-30% are in this
yes.
area?
Right. Yes. So through the chair, Senator Birch, we have some not perfect data about what industries those startups are in, but it tends to be the most popular categories tend to be accommodation and food service. A lot of that is tied to the visitor industry. Healthcare has been a major one as well. A lot of times, you know, smaller private practices and clinics are apparently one of the ones that are still expanding and opening, at least in the time period we've looked at. Construction and retail tend to be the biggest performers. In our report, we did take a look at those sectors, and those tended to be the ones that were expanding the most.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great question.
Thank you. And yes, and I love to take questions as we go. So please jump in. I'm happy to work that way. So we were just talking about, you know, the 5,000 startup jobs that were added each year. But you know, we all kind of know, we've all heard, you know, stats about, you know, a number of jobs or a number of businesses in their early years, they tend to close, right? Businesses are risky. A lot of them closed. Part of the way the economy works. So are those jobs that we're talking about, are they really kind of a flash in the pan? If these new businesses start, if they just close right away, you know, were those jobs actually valuable and enduring, or were they just a temporary thing that happened in the economy, right? Well, so we looked at the data on this. This is for Alaska specifically. This is the survival rate of firms after they start up. So after 1 year, what you see here is that about a quarter of businesses have closed after 1 year. And then subsequent year, additional businesses from that same group close. And it goes all the way down to year five. About half of the businesses that started are closed by then. So we've got all these jobs that got started, and then as the years go by, it seems like we've lost those jobs, right? Through the chair, Senator Bishop.
Do you do exit reviews with the people that are no longer in business on the way out, and can you spot a trend why?
Senator, through the chair, Senator Bishop, there is some data out there that speaks to why businesses fail, and we don't have a tremendous amount of specifics, but there's usually some combination there's a cash flow challenge, you know, obviously is often what they cite as the biggest reason on a survey, which we don't always know why. Okay, is it because customers didn't materialize? Is it because costs were too high? Is it because of some other factor, economic conditions, cost of healthcare, any of those kinds of things? So we don't always know for sure why that is, but often the market is not materializing and the customers are not materializing in the way that the business thought. That's usually what it comes down to, the reason why a business might fail. But there are, of course, a number of reasons why they might. There are always a number of inherent risks involved in a business that could set it back. Unrealistic expectations up front, financial management that wasn't as sound as it could have been, reasons like that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So we see that this is what's happened. The number of businesses that start in a given year, by year five, they've shrunk by half. But what's really fascinating, though, is that the businesses that don't close tend to be growing in their payroll, right? They tend to be, because they're young businesses, they tend to need to expand, you know, to get to their mature size. So by year five, the businesses that don't close have not quite, but almost doubled in terms of the number of people that they employ. So the economists call this up or out, you know, that the business is either going to close or it's going to expand, right? And so the net effect of it is that the business growth of the surviving firms actually offsets the jobs that are lost by the firms that close. And so that's how you end up, with this stat rate that I've got right here. Young firms we're talking about are firms that are 5 years or less in age. They add, between the period that we looked at, and this is pre-recession period, they added 89% of Alaska's net new private jobs to the economy. I think is a very important piece of information. Those new businesses, the dynamics of a business being founded, some of them not quite making it after a few years, the ones that do survive growing. This is kind of like, you can think of this as the main way that jobs get added to the private economy. This is the pipeline of jobs that get pushed into the private sector economy. You know, of course, government jobs follow a different rhythm, but this is how it happens. And so this really kind of underscores why programs like ours tend to devote a lot of resources to strengthening entrepreneurship in Alaska, supporting entrepreneurs, and to finding ways to help them grow and to create a more positive business climate. And this is also true for the nation as a whole, or really for almost any state in the country. You would see a similar trend to this. This is not at all unique to Alaska. We were the first ones to look at, so far as we can tell, we were the first to look at Alaska-specific data to see what it looked like. But this is really just repeating a conclusion that's been found many times over nationally and even internationally. So, you know, Alaska is a big place and a diverse place in terms of its economic conditions and ways of living and size of community and all host of other factors. And, you know, in our center, we do devote a certain amount of a large share of our effort around the rural economy. We have a, you know, commitment to distressed regions. And so we decided to take a look at how can we figure out which parts of the state are sort of more entrepreneurial, less entrepreneurial? What can we learn about the differences in business ownership and entrepreneurship in different parts of the state? So we created a measure of the number of these are employer businesses again per 1,000 residents. So this is a way to compare boroughs or census areas in the state that have different population sizes in a meaningful way. What we expected to see there was that probably urban areas like Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau would probably have, you know, more businesses per capita than more rural areas. But something that was a little bit unexpected, and by the way, the map here, if you can see, the darker areas are, you know, more businesses per capita. But the ones that are the very highest, the ones that have the most businesses per capita, are Skagway is off the chart, 100 businesses per 1,000. Statewide average is about 25. That's pretty close to the national average, too. 25 businesses per 1,000 residents. Anchorage has about that amount. Fairbanks has about that amount. Juneau's a little bit more. But some of the areas that have a small population and a large seasonal influx because of either commercial fishing or especially because of the visitor industry tend to have the most businesses per capita. So that's the story with Skagway, which has a small year-round population and gets almost a million visitors per year. That's why you'd expect that. The dark one that's kind of in the interior of the state that you see there is the Denali Borough. Same type of situation, a small population, large number of seasonal visitors, and all of the businesses that support them. And so this is pointing out something that I think is interesting, that actually the visitor industry is often a major sort of stimulus for entrepreneurship, that there are in fact a lot of business owners and entrepreneurs in that space that are very, very active there. Something that I do think is pretty relevant. The other glaring thing that stands out when we looked at the geography is that the lighter areas here that have the fewest number of businesses per capita tend to be in Western and Arctic Alaska. So 5 businesses per 1,000 compared to 25 for the state. Yes, Senator.
That's amazing, actually. Senator Costello.
Thank you, and I think this is a great presentation to have to follow up on our Department of Labor economic presentation. I was curious, do you know how much startups are costing? I mean, I know each one differs, but what the average cost is of a startup and then where they're getting their capital?
So in other words, through the chair, Senator Costello, how much startup capital businesses need in order to get going? You know, I unfortunately, off the top of my head, I'm not recalling. What I do recall is that the data breaks it into kind of categories, and there's actually a pretty, so like, you know, 0 to 25,000, 25,000 to 75,000, And what I'm recalling from the data is that it's actually kind of even, it's not quite evenly, but it's sort of broadly diffused across those categories, that it really runs a spectrum, and there isn't necessarily a good average number that I could point to in that. But I can tell you that's really important on that question is that the biggest way that businesses get financed when they're starting up is with personal or family savings. That's by about 2/3 of businesses start that way, and the next category on that is 16%. So people are generally having to put their own assets into businesses, and that's part of the way it works. Yes, Madam Chair.
That's really interesting, too. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm pretty sure you are familiar with Anchorage's Angel Fund.
Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson. Yes, yes, very much so.
Can you tell us how many businesses have benefited from that Angel Fund?
Actually, through the chair, Senator, I am not quite off the top of my head familiar with those numbers. The report that we provided that is one of the ones I'm presenting on is the Women in Entrepreneurship Report. It does have some of those figures in it because we were interested in seeing how much of the investment was going to women-owned businesses. Unfortunately, I don't know offhand how many they've invested in.
I'd be curious. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Nolan, I think that's a really good question, and if it's in your purview or if you know someone we could contact, I think that would be really great information to get to the committee. So if you have a name or somebody that I can reach out to provide that information, let me know.
Madam Chair, I do know who I could put you in touch with, and I can also chase down that information for you as well.
Excellent. Thank you.
So that's the picture kind of the entrepreneurship around the state is that there is, as with many other indicators you might look at, income or unemployment, there is an urban-rural divide with that kind of caveat that some rural areas that have high volume of seasonal folks do have, in fact, a lot of entrepreneurship. But in areas off the road system, off of the marine highway system, outside of coastal Alaska, that's where you do see that there is relatively, there's the entrepreneurship measures are quite a bit lower. So we also took a look, and we unfortunately couldn't break this down by borough or census area, but how many jobs does a typical startup have in different parts of the state? Because this is a pretty important measure, too. The data would only provide us with With Anchorage and Mat-Su as a combined metropolitan area, the Fairbanks North Star borough, and then kind of the balance of the state all lumped in as one category. And I'd love to be able to break that down a bit further. But you can see that this is the number of jobs that a startup in each of those regions would have. In the urban areas, you see that there are a lot more jobs per startup. Each company that gets started tends to hire more people when they're in an urban area than when they're outside of an urban area in the state. This is another measure. So there are fewer startups generally getting going, and then at the same time, those startups that do get going have fewer jobs per company. So this is really kind of another trend that we see that is mirrored nationally, that you do have large urban areas around the country that are growing much faster in any number of measures of entrepreneurship than the rural areas that are somewhat getting left behind. And so there's migration to to urban areas like we see in this state, and that is something that is mirrored nationally, and we do see that business success is more concentrated in urban areas as well. There are some other measures, too, about how fast businesses grow. They do tend to grow faster in urban areas. It's something that runs across several measures. Now, and how does Alaska compare to other states? This is where we were, again, very surprised by some of the results, that Alaska actually is a leader in a couple of measures of entrepreneurship. The Kauffman Foundation is a national group that does this index of entrepreneurship, that they break it down by state and they try to update it each year. The Kauffman Foundation showed that when it comes to states, the likelihood of an individual resident of a certain state starting a business in a given year, Alaska is consistently in the top two or three for the propensity to start a business. However, on the tendency to grow a business, the measure here that it's the share of scale-ups measure that you see here, where Alaska ranks 44th. That's how many businesses get to, I believe the measure is 50 employees by their 10th year in business. So a measure of a business really scaling up and growing fast. Alaska does poorly in that measure. We're near the bottom of the list of states on that. So we have a tendency, we have that itch to start businesses in Alaska. We start a lot of them, far more than the national average. At the same time, our businesses don't seem to quite grow beyond a certain point as readily as they might in other areas. And that's something we find interesting.
Sir Bishop?
It would be interesting to tease out the numbers on that. Alaska's Achilles heel, my words, it has always been its economy of scale, meaning population, right? And where you would tease the numbers out, it would be interesting to see if those startups that go beyond the five-year mark and are still in business or in areas of the state with the highest population density.
That's through the chair, Senator Bishop. That is, I think you're spot on about the scale issue. The state's population, we're 740,000 people. That makes us a small market for many business purposes. And so you do see businesses, I can think of several that are in this boat that were serving that had a lot of customers out of state. They exhausted the in-state market, and it got them to a point where they had to move out of state. And I can think of a few examples of businesses that have had to do that, and that is the biggest reason is that we are a small market, a small state. I think your point about population density and success is probably also valid. If we were able to look at that data, that's what I would expect as well, that businesses would grow beyond that point in the more dense areas. Absolutely. So this is something that I found interesting. You'll hear sometimes it expressed, I've heard this quite a bit before, that maybe Alaska doesn't have a strong culture of entrepreneurship, and I think that's a phrase that I've heard. And in my view, it depends on what measure you're talking about. But I think that the tendency of people in Alaska to want to start businesses and to actually do so is, in fact, very high. And that's something that I think that Alaska, we should really recognize about the state. Now, we, of course, one of the reasons that I was asked here is to talk about women in entrepreneurship, and we have the report in front of you. And I think I want to set the stage by that by pointing out several factors about business owners. They demographically, business owners are less likely than the population overall to be a member of an ethnic minority group. They are more likely to be male. There is, of course, a heavy skew toward male owners of business. And they also are likely to have significant personal savings. I was mentioning earlier that the that the that you know, personal savings or family savings is the biggest source of capital that businesses use, and that's certainly true. So that means that groups that wherever there's a wage gap between men and women, or a wage gap between ethnic minorities and non-minorities, that does in fact actually probably contribute to a gap in business ownership as well. There's a lot of complexity to that and a lot of research that still could be done on the subject, but that tends to be the case. Something that is surprising to a lot of people, you know, we often have this idea of the tech entrepreneur who's in their 20s, the Mark Zuckerberg type of people who become a billionaire by the time they're in their mid or late 20s. And so there's a perception of young tech entrepreneurs as being kind of the norm, but in reality, most entrepreneurs are in fact a little bit older, a little bit further into their careers. The average age of a person starting a business is about 40 years old. MIT did a study of the fastest growing companies that received venture capital, and what was the average age of the employer of the founder of those companies, and they found that person was about 45 years old. If we look at a snapshot of current business owners without regard to how old they were when they started the business, half of Alaska's business owners are age 55 or older. And I think and a significant share of those are actually 65 or older. So it does raise issues around exit planning. Only 6%, a tiny share, are actually under the age of 35. There's a very heavy skew toward people that have more experience in a certain industry, and a number of people are also on their second business too. About 40% of current business owners owned a business prior. So that's also something that I think is pretty relevant. Serial entrepreneurship, something that seems to be a very real factor. Now, so we decided to crunch the numbers. I have a staff person, my lead analyst, Rochelle Johnson, who did some really, really fantastic work on this. As far as we can tell, she's the first person who's actually dug into this data to look at the rates of business ownership by state around the country. And we were genuinely surprised to find this out, that Alaska is in fact does rank first. We have the highest share of women-owned businesses of any state in the country. We are first out of 50 in that respect, and that's something that I was genuinely not expecting to find that at all. So very, very interesting piece of information there. Why it might be that way is tough to say. When we look at the numbers between male-owned or female-owned businesses, you know, there's still a pretty significant gap. About two male-owned businesses for every one, you know, female-owned business in the state, and then there's always a share that are about equal ownership between men and women. But at the national level, it's more like a 3-to-1 gap. So it's in some ways, you know, it highlights that it's still quite a ways away from there being anything quite like parity between men and women in terms of entrepreneurship. There's a likely possibility that you know, the wage earning gap is something that might mean that women are less likely to leverage more savings as much as men are. There are factors like that might be at play, but really another relevant piece of information here is that investment that goes to businesses is heavily skewed against female entrepreneurs. Only about 2% of the venture capital in the country that gets deployed is actually going to a firm owned by women. And despite that, this one study that we found through Forbes said that women that receive venture capital, businesses founded by women, tend to get actually better operating results. Produce higher returns. Very interesting finding. Despite that, still such a gap.
And there's no explanation of why only 2.2% of females get venture capital. Despite the results, you said only 2.2 venture capital in the U.S. goes toward women-owned companies. Why? I mean, is there any explanation for that?
Well, Madam Chair, what we found, and we talk about this a bit in the Women in Entrepreneurship report, is that there does seem to be a bit of a bias on behalf of the investors themselves. There was some research done about when venture capitalists are receiving a pitch by entrepreneurs, you know, deciding whether to invest in a company, that they tend to, their line of questioning toward male founders is a bit different than it is toward female founders, that they tend to ask more defensive questions or tend to be, seem to be more skeptical than they are with male founders. And so that seems to be a factor.
Okay, interesting. Senator Bishop?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So what's the rate of return for males, and what's the operating results for males?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, I actually don't have a comparison for male-owned firms. I guess these are benchmarked against. I believe these are benchmarked against male-owned firms. So 41% higher than male-owned firms, 58%. But I would have to double check on that.
Well, if that's the case, then if I was loaning money, that would be a slam dunk for me.
Through the chairs, it does raise questions about why that is the case. I would agree with you on that.
Bingo. I totally agree with you, Senator Bishop.
One pertinent piece of information on this is that the Senator Gray Jackson had asked about the 49th State Angel Fund, and I don't recall the exact breakdown between male founders and female founders that their investment dollars went to, but they actually are doing quite a bit better than this national figure. So they seem to be outperforming the national average on investment into women-owned businesses.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I can follow up on the Angel Fund, my staff informed me that in one of the handouts, this one, on page 13 and 14, there's some discussion on the Angel Fund. I really appreciate having that in this booklet.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Through the chair, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And so what page was that again?
It's in this handout.
Okay, the one that Natasha brought us. Okay, excellent. Okay.
Thank you.
So then another piece of information, too, is that in the same vein about women and venture capital, women that are members of an ethnic minority group are getting 0.2% of the venture money, 0.2%, so a tiny, tiny fraction of the overall piece. And so there's an even greater gap on that respect. And so that's something else that is interesting, does sort of, you know, it warrants, I think, you know, more attention to understand why that would be. You know, to briefly touch on as well, ethnicity and entrepreneurship, this information that I've got here is for Alaska, comparing the share of business owners to the share of population of different ethnic groups. About 89% of business owners in Alaska are non-minority, are of European descent, but they represent actually about 66% of the population, so tend to be overrepresented, and you can see the different shares here.
That's really interesting, too. Senator Bishop?
I apologize.
No, it's a great question.
This is right in my wheelhouse.
Love it.
It would be interesting to see you overlay this slide with the demographics of the state, because this to me looks like the trend of the population of the state by ethnicity.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, so this is comparing is the share of business owners to the share of population, so it is overlaying business ownership with the general population, and so you can kind of see where the gaps are there. So there is a bit of a skew toward non-minority business owners are a bigger share of business owners than they are of the general population. So,
and the point I was then I'll make can I make a point?
Please, yeah.
So, this doesn't. I mean, Alaska Natives is the highest growing minority population in the state. So, and that, yours. Anyway.
Yes, and yes, through the chair, that is the largest gap that jumps out here. You know, Alaska Natives are roughly around 20% of the state's population, and a much, much smaller share of business owners. One piece that I would add to this, though, that might change thinking on it, is that this data doesn't take into account, this is looking at businesses that are owned by an individual or a small number of individuals and not shareholder-owned corporations. So Alaska Native corporations are obviously a major player in the state economy, and so I would say probably some entrepreneurship in the Alaska Native community is probably expressed through those corporations, although it still does, you know, point to a gap that I think is important as well. Something else noteworthy on this vein is that in Alaska, as well as in the nation as a whole, first-generation immigrants do have very high rates of business ownership as well, generally higher rates of business ownership than the general population. So that was covering kind of our jobs and entrepreneurship and our women in entrepreneurship and demographics and entrepreneurship. And I'm going to shift gears a little bit here, but happy to circle back as we have questions. Something that our center has been working on for the last year. This was done in partnership with the Division of Economic Development at the Department of Commerce in the state. We decided to look at areas in the state economy where we noticed that there were kind of like these clusters of entrepreneurial interest, where we saw there were entrepreneurs that were active in a space that wasn't necessarily getting a lot of attention, but that has but that is tied to an area of expertise that Alaska has. So what are areas of strength in the state economy that have growth potential? We picked a handful of these to dig into in more depth. We think that, you know, there's probably a much bigger list than the sectors we came up with: aviation and aerospace, outdoor products, renewable energy, and boat and shipbuilding were four that we picked for this. There's a fifth one that we're going to be releasing in the coming months on food and agriculture in the state of Alaska as well. These were ones where we studied them by talking to entrepreneurs. We interviewed as many entrepreneurs that are working in these spaces as we could. We learned about what's going on in their markets, why Alaska makes sense for that industry, why they decided to start their business, and we tried to see what we could learn from them about what needs they might have, what challenges they might have, and what are the opportunities that they face. And so this generated a lot of really interesting and surprising insights, and I can talk about some of those with you right now. One is that if you look at this picture, I know it's kind of a blurry picture here, but so this is a Sikorsky helicopter flown by the Austrian armed forces over in Europe. You notice that it's got skis on it. Those skis were built at a little shop off of O'Malley Road in Anchorage. Airglass. That is supplying. They make carbon fiber skis, fuel pods, storage containers, and other fixtures on aircraft that they sell to the civil aviation space, including, you know, in-state. There's obviously a large market of private pilots, as well as to, and the number that their manager quoted me was about 40 overseas militaries. So an Alaskan company, a very, you know, small, unpretentious shop in South Anchorage, is essentially the global leader in this area of providing this type of equipment on aircraft. I mean, it's, you know, we're talking about a specialty niche, but not something that we expected. Yes,
that's something I didn't know. Wow, this is interesting, Senator Birch.
I just wanted to thank you. It's a great picture. It's a great product, and it's dead in the middle of Senate District M in South Anchorage, which I am proud to represent. And they do, you're exactly right. They do a worldwide business and phenomenal. I've been out to Jay Bear and seen their product line mounted out there, busy saving people and doing great things. And it's it's something to be proud of for sure.
Yes, and through the chair, thank you, Senator Birch. I appreciate that.
Yep, thanks.
Senator Costello.
Thank you. Do you have any more details about this company, or when they started, and, you know, how long they've been around, and I'm just curious about how companies get started, and was wondering if you knew.
Yes, through the chair. So Airglass, was started actually by a World War II aviator. I believe his name was Wes Landis. He started the company actually in the 50s, doing basic fiberglass composite work. You know, you take a piece of cloth and you soak it in a resin and form it into shapes, and so that's what he started with, building just basic aircraft skis, and then over the years the company's been bought, and it's got an owner. The original owner sold to a current owner, I believe is the situation there. They expanded into more high tech, newer age materials. So carbon fiber, which is a pretty cutting edge, much newer material, is what they're making a lot of their products out of. They still make some out of the other stuff. And they continue to serve an in-state market of civil aviators, because Alaska has, you know, more private pilots per capita than any state. We have actually more aircraft than almost any state. Alaska has more aircraft than states like New York and Illinois that are many times our size and population. Alaska has a deep well of knowledge in aviation that spurs entrepreneurship and companies like this one. And by the way, this is not a totally unique company. There are several others that we interviewed in the course of this study that make aircraft components. Many of them are doing metal fabrication of specific aircraft components that are usually small, very high value, and that are sold to global markets. They incidentally have Alaska customers, but another one called AeroTwin that's located out at Merrill Field in Anchorage. They sell to, they were telling us, they sell to companies in sub-Saharan Africa and to China, and their parts go everywhere. They specialize in, you know, metal exhaust deflectors, little fittings on aircraft that that they've developed. They actually did the development work on. They created them, and then they take them through an FAA process that gives them the right to create that product, an exclusive right to it, sort of like a patent almost. And so we have a number of these. Another one is called Airframes Alaska that's out in Birchwood. And this is actually an area of specialty that Alaskans have. We know aviation well. Alaska is a place that did some of the pioneering work, some of the first times that floats were used, some of the first times that skis on aircraft were used. The ADS-B system that locates aircraft that's becoming the global standard, developed and tested in Alaska, unmanned aircraft. Some of the first non-military uses of unmanned aircraft were in Alaska, in conjunction with the University of Alaska Fairbanks. So this is kind of an area where, you know, we've talked about in the maritime sector, Alaska is a maritime state, and very much so. Alaska is also an aviation state, and this is an area where we have opportunities that I think we haven't quite fully realized.
So I know Senator Costello is a pilot. There may be other pilots here, but I am a little bit competitive. And you just mentioned something about Birchwood and a business in Birchwood, so I just want to let people know that is in my district. And I'd also like to point out the fact that I have a really amazing business in Eagle River. Just know of somebody who runs this. It's Alaska Wing Covers, and they cover it's Alaska Wing Covers. It's been in business since 1989, and they make covers for Arctic insulated cowling covers as well as wings, and it's Alaska Super Cub Adventures is very active with them. But it's a really amazing small business, and it is a woman in Eagle River. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Madam Chair. So this was an area and this speaks to some of the other sectors that we talked about too, is that they have a bit of an export orientation. We like to find businesses where they might be selling out of state, and why there's a reason why Alaska would be a place that you would base a business that you're selling out of state. The deep vein of aviation expertise is certainly one example of that. Another one too, outdoor products, outdoor gear. You know, we've probably all seen these fat tire bikes around our state, 907 fat tire bikes, you know, obviously named after the state area code. These guys started. Alaska actually has a claim to probably having invented the fat tire bike. Depending on, you know, who you ask, if you go way back into the 80s, the Iditarod Classic, that's a bike race over the Iditarod Trail. You had a lot of people welding, you know, wider frames and trying to stick two mountain bike tires so that they could ride on top of snow more effectively. 907 was started by two Alaskan entrepreneurs that were just didn't find anything on the market that was quite like what they had. They were one of the early, they weren't the first, but they were one of the early companies that started producing a commercial fat tire bike. Of course, you know, the bikes, a lot of bikes are not made in the United States, so these bikes are not made in Alaska, but they are designed in Alaska. And they are tested in Alaska, and the company is based here in Alaska, but they sell nationally. 907 is a recognized brand in bikes. This one happens to have a bag that's made by Revelate Designs on it, which is also an Alaska-based company that makes bike bags that sells everywhere in the country and internationally as well. There are other examples like the pack rafts, the alpaca pack raft, that is no longer based in Alaska, but was started in the state, and that company is really who initiated sort of the modern pursuit of pack rafting in Alaska. So this is another area where, you know, what do Alaskans know a lot about? Well, we know a lot about playing outside for sure. All of the companies that we talked to in outdoor products, in fact, that were selling out of state, even though they were selling out of Alaska, they still bragged about Alaska in their heritage, right? So, like, this is what you see when you go to 907's page, is that's a real bragging point for them, even for customers located in Minnesota or Kansas, that the bike is designed for Alaska conditions. That seems to indicate, you know, that it's rugged and that it can hold up. Some of you might have heard of the company Heather's Choice that makes prepackaged meals that are, you know, gourmet meals that are freeze dried that you can take backpacking with you, add hot water to them. That's also a company that is, you know, distributing around the country. Started by Heather Kelly, a young woman in Alaska, and they've been a very successful company, to again leveraging that Alaskan outdoor expertise. this is something that seems to have a lot of growth potential. And also nationally, a lot of venture capital money now seems to be going toward outdoor products. And so this is an area where there does seem to be some pretty good growth potential.
I think we could have hundreds of these examples in Alaska, which is super, super cool to finally have a really good statistic. But Bambino's is another one.
Yes.
It's just amazing selling Alaska seafood, baby food. It's just, and they're going international. They just launched internationally. So anyway, thank you.
Yes, and thank you for that, Madam Chair. The Alaska brand, I think in general, applies to a lot of sectors for a lot of different reasons, and I think that is something that is common to a lot of these sectors that we're talking about, is that it's an asset that has appeal to out-of-state audiences, and food is one for sure. The idea of Alaska coming from Alaska having a more pure environment, Alaskan seafood, Alaska produce in some cases does have a draw to it. So another one too. Our first study in the series was looking at boats and ships. You know, and obviously, boat and shipbuilding has an important footprint in Southeast Alaska. But one of the things that jumped out at us was that, you know, you have a boat building is a very old industry. You know, that in a lot of ways, in many respects, hasn't changed a lot in the last several decades. But we found examples of innovation in boat building that were also interesting and surprising, as another area where Alaskans spend a lot of, boats are an important way of life when we're talking about our fishing or our hunting for personal use or for commercial use or for subsistence use. And that's an area that had surprising innovation in it. So this on the left, you see there that what you're looking at there are these long sheets that are being cut using a computer-controlled device. It's a high density plastic that are cut from these large sheets that are going to be welded into a boat. It's a company called Class 5 Boatworks, located in Fairbanks. It's a spinoff of a company, Lifewater Engineering, Senator Bishop's probably familiar with. And these boats, the Class 5 Boatworks, they go to the boat shows in the state, and they will let people, they've done this before, they will let people take a sledgehammer and hit their boats as hard as they possibly can in the side, and it doesn't make a dent. You know, this plastic is some of the toughest material you could use for a boat, so these are high speed kind of river boats that, you know, might be able to go over gravel or hard surfaces without any damage. And then the other, this Alumiski, this is a company that is these boats are made in Wasilla, and they're an aluminum jet ski with a very shallow draft. They can go in water, like in glacial streams where the water could be, you know, just inches and get there very fast. These were originally targeted at a recreation market of people that want to, you know, go and play in the Alaska wilderness, and the company has actually found that its market is really more so in search and rescue in the professional market space, that these boats are really good for getting to places like an Upper Cook Inlet, where you might have a low tide if you had a situation where you had to rescue someone. This is the ideal craft. So again, Alaska heritage in that design too. You know, another aspect of these, one of our reports, we did one on renewable energy and energy efficiency as well. And you know, and like I mentioned at the beginning, we do this research, and we're trying to find you know, insights and new knowledge that we can put into use in some way. And so what we had found with the renewable energy space, you know, we've got companies in state, and these are less so products, more so services, consulting, a lot of folks that are Arctic Solar Ventures, you know, that are growing very quickly, that are installing rooftop solar, for instance, just one example. But we found that in our opinion, a lot of the research on how to promote entrepreneurship, how the public sector, what the public sector can best do to help entrepreneurship, is really to help kind of connect entrepreneurs to other entrepreneurs, help connect entrepreneurs to sources of capital, help connect entrepreneurs to students that might be interns. There's a network support structure for entrepreneurs that really is shown to make them more successful.
Senator Bishop.
Madam Chair, great segue, because I had a question here and you just opened the door for me to ask it. So do you help any of these people?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, yes, we do.
Second question, follow-up. So then do you know the assets that the Alaska Department of Labor has to offer for new business startups, and do you connect the two?
Yes, through the chair, we are familiar with Department of Labor's workforce funds with the and apprenticeship programs. So that has been a resource that actually we did refer them to quite a bit. Those are really valuable programs, and that are probably, especially when we're talking about smaller businesses or startups, do seem to be somewhat underutilized by them. I think it does seem like larger employers in the state are more familiar with them than small ones. And the small businesses often have workforce needs that are unmet. This is something I'll come back to. So that is that becomes a very important resource. Also, the fact being that we're a university, people look to us sometimes to, can you connect me with students for internships? And that's something that we've been also trying to help facilitate as well.
Excellent question.
So this this event that we did, this was done last spring, called Volt 49. This is something called a design sprint that Google has popularized, where you have teams of people in a compressed period of time, about 5 days, try to create a new product, take it through the process of refining it, and then at the end of 5 days, you have at least a prototype of a product that can be taken out into the market. And so we decided to do this for renewable energy based on some of the findings from our report. And the Volt 49 sprint, we recruited teams of people to work on products. The winning product for it, over the course of a month, they met 5 times. We stretched it out for working folks. We taught them sort of entrepreneurial tools and processes related to innovation, how to come up with an idea, assess a customer need, and develop a rough prototype that you can then refine. And the winning one went to a group that came up with a type of server that would be farmed that would be powered on a renewable wind or solar system. So it was an exciting thing, and this is a type of a offering that we do that it's training for entrepreneurs that is hands-on and effective and simulates what they're doing. This is something we've taken into our student population at the university, and we'd like to continue to refine and expand upon. It's our part of our way of teaching entrepreneurship in a way that's relevant to people that are going to actually start a business by actually doing it. So, you know, a few other observations. You know, this is another company, Fishyware. This was started by Linda Leary, an experienced Alaska businesswoman. She launched this company, Fishyware, that saw that a lot of fishing attire is like fishing attire that I own is kind of bulky, oversized. It's all marketed toward men, and it's all olive drab. She decided to make designs that were more colorful, marketed toward women that were active outdoors, that wanted to fish, that currently weren't really being served well by the marketplace. And this is a business that's done really well. So you know, the common thread to all of these emerging sectors that we found, you know, one is that the first point entrepreneurs leading the way is that our philosophy isn't that we think there's an opportunity in a certain area. You know, as economic developers or economists, we see there's an area of opportunity in the state. What we want to do is we want to see entrepreneurs identifying an area. I believe that Alaska has an opportunity when I see entrepreneurs doing something in that space. And so we want to be supporting that. And that's a really important point about all of these. To some degree, we didn't pick these sectors. The entrepreneurs almost picked them, and we followed. That a lot of the companies in Alaska, you know, we're in some ways a hard place to do business, but businesses that are successful are finding those niche or underserved markets, like the Fishyware example. Of women who fish or are active in certain outdoor sports, where there wasn't attire that was really made for them or gear that was made for them. Another thing here is the product development piece, significant research and development R&D. This is something where we saw, like with the airplane component examples, a lot of businesses that are actually creating products. You know, there's always more potential for scalability, for high growth when you're creating a product where you can where you can grow beyond, where you can grow rapidly to a certain size rather than get stuck at a smaller size. The capital access piece is also something that's very interesting. Some of the small businesses, including especially the aviation ones, said that their part of their business depends upon them creating new products for aircraft. They need to be creating new products if they're to grow. But designing a product, you know, from scratch involves a lot of testing, a lot of labor, a lot of very skilled labor. These companies, even that are small, they have very smart people. One of the people that I interviewed had a master's in aviation engineering aerospace engineering from MIT. You know, worked for a very small company in Anchorage, and he designs products. There's a lot of upfront expense involved in creating something and taking it through a process, like for the FAA process, where you'll have all this upfront expense. and then it's going to be a while before you actually sell that product to generate revenue. So so that they there was some interest that we saw in some sort of an R&D tax credit or tax incentive, because Alaska, of course, does have, even though we don't have income taxes, we do have corporate taxes. And so some kind of relief around that was something that we did see some interest in. We did see a lot of companies, you know, that like the boat builders also, they have a lot of upfront expenses. And so some of them did say that they had challenges with capital access. And so that was something else that, that I think was relevant. And then all of them, this bottom point here about workforce, all of them, all of the sectors, majority of the businesses said that workforce was in some way a challenge for them. Everything from skilled people to fill, you know, specialty areas, all the way to just basic soft skills, basic, you know, getting people to show up. You know, if you talk to the business community in Alaska, you hear this a lot, that we just have a small workforce, a small pool of folks, and that workforce is always a challenge. And so that was something that we took to heart, you know, being the fact that we're part of the university, that what is the way that we can help to connect these entrepreneurs with workforce resources and like the Department of Labor, you know, that Senator Bishop mentioned. So these were some of the important trends from those reports. That I'm of course happy to take questions to the extent that we still have time, but that is my report.
Comment.
A couple comments, please, Senator Bishop.
Yes, ma'am. I'd just like to close, and I'd like to thank make a couple of thank yous here to Senator Costello for her work last year and those innovation roundtables we had, and what she did with in this committee with talking about the economy and shining a light on this very subject. Thank you, and I'd like to thank you for today's presenter. He knows his onions and did a very good job, and I was entertained.
Outstanding, and I want to thank my staff, Natasha, for helping coordinate this, and I have asked Mia to put a few comments on the record before I thank you. And I do have a couple appointees on the board, so you guys hold on. Okay, but first, go ahead, Mia. Do you want to make a
Yeah, pick? Thank you, Madam Chair. I just think that having Nolan come before the committee is great. He's been here before, and we've known for a long time that innovation drives an economy, and Alaskans tend to be natural innovators, as do young people in our schools. So I just think these stories about businesses are really great to hear about, and I hope that our equity crowd investing legislation that we passed and the 1202 C Corp legislation that we passed are helpful to businesses that are looking for equity. And I just, you know, it's nice in this environment to hear some good news, especially about the women entrepreneurs. So thank you for your effort in making that a possibility here in Alaska.
Yes. And through the chair, thank you very much, Senator Costello. And I do appreciate the leadership that you took on some of those pieces of legislation that you mentioned as well.
Yeah, and we're really thankful she's our vice chair, because we're trying to continue to shine lights on things that she was able to shine on. So I really wanted to personally say thank you to you. You were very energetic and enthusiastic, and I think you brought great questions from every single member that was here. And it was on February 14th. It was a really great committee, and I really would just wanted to say, Nolan, thank you very much for being here.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate this very much, the committee. I welcome the opportunity, and I hope that I can be a resource for this committee going forward. If I ever can, I'm happy to do so. So thank you.
Well, excellent. And just to point out your question, the next presentation that you pointed out, thank you for the women and entrepreneurs in Alaska. It is on the Angel Fund. It's 18% of women get that Angel Fund. So it's on page 13. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks for pulling that together. So thanks again, Nolan.
Thank you very much.
So we've got just a couple other things of business on our committee today. So we have Christopher, and is it Christopher Jamie or Christopher? Are you online? And maybe I pronounced your last name wrong. If you could introduce yourself to the committee, please.
Yes, my name is Christopher Jaime. I'm a lieutenant with the Wildlife Trooper stationed in Soldada. I've lived in Alaska for 26 years, and I've been with the Department of Public Safety for the last 18 of those years.
Excellent. So you are going, please feel free to point a few other things. You're taking the public safety seat, is my understanding, on the appointee to the Marijuana Control Board. And if you want to add any other comments, please feel free, and maybe people in my committee will have questions, maybe they won't, I'm not sure. But if you want to say anything else, please feel free. They do have your resume in front of them.
All right, Chairman, or Chairwoman, I do appreciate that. I have a brief opening statement. So, good afternoon, members of the Labor and Commerce Committee. First, I want to apologize to the committee for not being present. I'm currently in Kentucky attending an advanced law enforcement training at the Southern Police Institute. I'd like to thank all of you for taking the time out of your busy schedules. I'm honored to be speaking with you this afternoon. During my time with the Department of Public Safety, I've had the privilege of living and raising my children in several communities throughout the state. These communities have included Anchorage, Sitka, Fairbanks, Nome, and Soldotna, where I'm currently at now. I've worked both in the Division of Alaska State Troopers and the Division of Alaska Wildlife Troopers. I have a diverse career where I've had the opportunity to work in an urban setting, provide rural patrol out of Nome, and enforce wildlife statutes and regulations throughout the state. These assignments have made me the trooper that I am today and give me a well-rounded perspective of the needs and challenges facing the state. I am grateful for Governor Dunleavy appointing me to the Marijuana Control Board. I understand the citizens of Alaska voted to legalize the consumption, cultivation, and distribution of marijuana. I'm not looking forward to expressing my personal opinions of marijuana or voting against the will of the people. I plan on taking a common sense approach while on board and regulating marijuana from a public safety perspective. I will be receptive to the industry needs and weigh all decisions through the lens of law enforcement. I've already been contacted by a local cultivator in Kenai and walked through the business and had a detailed explanation of the challenges that they face. I also had the opportunity to speak with an owner or the owner of Highbush Marijuana in Soldotna, and she also brought me to the business. So I got to see the business from, I guess it's called Speed to Sale, which was very, which is nice. Let me see the business as a whole. And I also want to relay to the board that I have not received any policy direction from the governor's office or from my department. I've been chosen due to my training, experience, and my service to the state of Alaska. Members of the board, I'd like to thank you one more time for this opportunity and look forward to the rest of the confirmation process.
Thank you very much. Your resume is extremely impressive, and we are very thankful to have somebody of your caliber willing to sit on the public safety seat. But I want to see if there's any questions from the committee members. It does not look like it. So, Christopher, thank you very, very much for being here today. I know you're calling from out of state, and it's very, very much appreciated taking time to call in today. So with that, you feel free to hold on. We're going to open public testimony in a few minutes, but we don't have very many people on the line, so it may be short compared to the 2.5 hours the other day. So, okay, so next we are going to go to Charlie Cross. Charlie, we've been having a tough time getting a hold of you. I believe you're the appointee from Nome. If you could please introduce yourself. Please, Charlie.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Charlie Cross. I was born and raised in Nome and Elam and Kotzebue, and I went to high school in Anchorage. After high school, I attended the University of Alaska in Fairbanks, where I studied criminal justice. I left Fairbanks, moved to Albuquerque, New Mexico, where I followed my then-girlfriend and now wife, was married there, came back to Alaska, and I was in a hurry to become an Alaska State Trooper. So at 23, I was selected to be hired by the state troopers, and had a very rewarding career. I was in Fairbanks for 2 years, and transferred to Kodiak, where I was a patrol trooper, and then also a Alaska wildlife trooper. I left there to move to Anchorage, and after. And as I got to Anchorage, I was an investigator with the Alaska, at the time it was called ABADE, Alaska Bureau of Alcohol and Drug Enforcement, now the statewide drug enforcement unit. And I was an investigator for the Western Alaska Alcohol and Narcotics Team, where I conducted investigations for alcohol interdiction, drug interdiction, and I was also a deputized postal inspector looking for illegal alcohol being sent to Western Alaska. After 4 years of being an investigator, I promoted to sergeant, where I was the in charge of the major offenders units, and I worked directly with the Drug Enforcement Administration and occasionally with the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I did that for about a year and a half. Then I moved back over to take charge of the Western Alaska Alcohol and Narcotics Team. And that really is where my passion lies, is Western Alaska, since I was born and raised out there. I had an opportunity to move back to Nome as a sergeant in 2012. And when I was in once I moved to Nome, I was in charge of the Nome Post and Union Creek Post for the state troopers, and we still conducted drug and alcohol interdictions when the drug investigator was not around. I have a family from our family all over Western Alaska, but in particular in the North Sound region, so I have a real vested interest in the welfare of Western Alaska, in particular regard to the way in which alcohol is treated. So I have, in disclosure, I am personal friends with Rex Lee, who is a member of the board currently, and also as a, something I am happy to discuss is my grandfather John Cross was a delegate in the Alaska Constitution, and he himself was originally from Goddard, Kansas, but World War II brought him to Alaska, and he found a home in Kotzebue where he was an aviator and entrepreneur up there. So I'm pleased and honored to work with the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board and this legislature and this governor's office to make Alaska better in terms of any sort of commerce decisions related to alcoholic beverages.
Very, very impressive, Charlie. So thank you very much. I'm going to see if anybody has any comments or questions. Senator Birch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just in reviewing the board requirements, there's a requirement that of the five voting members, there's one representing public safety, one representing public health, one residing in a rural area, and then a person actively engaged in the marijuana industry, or actually two people engaged in the marijuana industry on the initial board. And so my understand, I'm presuming you are in the is that the rural area seat?
Yes. One thing I did not mention is I retired from the Alaska State Troopers October 1st.
Right.
And so I am and my appointed position is for the rural position, not for any others.
Okay.
Great question.
Okay, follow-up?
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. The function of the board is to control the cultivation, manufacture, and sale of marijuana in the state. The board is vested with the powers and duties necessary to enforce this chapter. Is that something you're comfortable discharging? And in the interest of disclosure, I was co-chaired an organization that was opposed to this ballot initiative, but recognizing that it's moved forward, we've got a board in place. I'm I see you're in the alcohol beverage control side. Okay, gotcha. I was looking at the wrong resume here. So, but you are in a rural position in this capacity in any case.
Through the chair, yes, that's correct.
Great. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Senator Bishop.
Yes. Thank you for stepping forward and putting your name forward in this process. I was interested to see that you're a financial coach and you've got your training from, I'm assuming, the Dave Ramsey Group. Is that right?
Through the chair, yes, that's correct, sir.
And I'm
I'm glad to see that you go out and spend time at the, I'm assuming at the jail out there in Nome and working with the inmates and students. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes, sir. I've taught classes to inmates at the Anvil Mountain Correctional Center.
Yep. Thank you for doing that.
Senator Bishop, thank you. That was something I found just amazing. A good compassion there for the community and willing to help empower the inmates and the students there. So thank you for pointing that out. Anything else? Okay. Thank you, Charlie. You can hold on. We have just a few on the line that are going to testify. So and it's both for both of you. So if you could just hold on. I think we'll be done in less than 10 minutes if you could just hold on. Open public testimony. We're first going to start with Chelsea Foster from Anchorage, and then we will be going to Caleb Sanders and Wasilla. So, Chelsea, if you're on the line, we're going to do two-minute limit. If you could state your name, affiliation, and proceed.
Good afternoon, Senators. My name is Chelsea Foster, and I'm here representing myself. I'd like to add on the record that Jeff Ankerfeld was a great addition to the Marijuana Control Board, and we are sad to see him go. Personally, I'd like to see Paul Honeman in the seat. With that being said, I do hope to see, if confirmed, Christopher work with great tenacity and diligence, as well as to keep an open mindset. When it comes to making decisions for this industry, as we heard previously today, the cannabis industry has added a lot of value and jobs to this economy. I'd like to thank you, Senators, especially Senator Birch, as I am a constituent in your district, for your thorough evaluations of the Marijuana Control Board appointees and your time. Have a great day.
Thank you, Chelsea. Thanks for being positive. Next, we're going to go to Caleb Sanders from Wasilla.
Hi, my name is Caleb Saunders. I'm the CEO and owner of Green Jar. I was calling today about Christopher Jamie, and I just wanted to say thank you to him for all the time that he's volunteering to put forward in this process. Looking over his resume, it looks like he's put quite a deal of hours in his life to be dedicated towards public safety in our communities. And I appreciate that somebody that can represent the seat has so much experience for the seat that they're going in there for. And again, just wanted to appreciate and welcome him if he is confirmed, and that I appreciate all that time. I know I sit and watch. It takes quite a bit, and it's a big commitment. Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you very much, Caleb. I really appreciate that a lot. So with that, I'm going to look to see if there's anybody in the room to testify. Does not look like it, and there's nobody else online, so I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony. And so with that, I'm going to look to I missed one. I'm going to reopen public testimony. Sorry, Ryan, missed you and the LIO in Kenai. Ryan, did you want to go ahead and speak?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Respected senators of the Labor and Commerce Committee, my name is Ryan Tunseth. I own a retail marijuana store in Kenai called East Rip. First, I just wanted to express my support for Officer Jaime. I think, I don't know Chris personally, but I do know that he's reached out to other local businesses, and I've talked to those, business owners about it, and they felt like it was very meaningful, that he would work to kind of understand the inner workings. I've also spoke to a very close friend of mine that I went to high school with, who's a state trooper here in Soldotna, and he really had nothing but good things to say about Chris as well. And I thought it was interesting when I asked him if he thought he would be, you know, impartial and able to uphold the law, and my buddy just sort of laughed at me and said, you know, we take an oath for that. I totally believe that he'll do a great job, and I felt like it was important to support Chris from a marijuana business standpoint, to show that it's not us businesses always against anybody, that he obviously meets the qualifications for this seat and will bring a sensible voice. And so, you know, I think it's a good pick, and I think he deserves to be on that seat and deserves the benefit of the doubt that he will make decisions that are impartial. So again, I just want to you know, express my support for him, wish him the best of luck. I'll kind of echo what Caleb said in that, you know, thank him for the time, because those board meetings do tend to really go a long time. And let me just sort of close this in stating that, you know, I really do appreciate you guys asking the questions to them, that they can be impartial and support the law. I would hope that you hold your colleagues to the same standard. Thank you.
Very constructive. Thank you, Ryan. And with that, I don't see anybody else online, and I am going to see if there's anybody else in the room before I close public testimony. It looks like no. Okay, so with that, I'm going to ask what the will is. Everybody good with moving these names forward? Okay, and just to point out, Charles Cross is for the rural seat, and Christopher Jaime is the appointee to the marijuana control for the public safety. And with that, just okay, so the chair moves appointees from the committee in accordance to AS 3905-080. The Labor and Commerce Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointments be forwarded to the joint session for consideration. Appointee to the Marijuana Control Board, Christopher Jaime, and appointee to the Alcohol Control Board, Charlie Cross. This does not reflect an intent by members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions. So thank you, Christopher and Charlie, so much for being on the line and holding on the entire time through that. I hope you enjoyed the presentation as much as we did, and thank you very, very much for being online today. With that, we will have closing comments now. Our next scheduled meeting will take place during the regular scheduled meeting time at 1:30 next Tuesday, February 19th. We intend to take up SB 16. As you all know, we closed amendment process at 5 o'clock on Monday, this past Monday. This is the Save the Fair bill. And we're going to be bringing a committee substitute to the committee and having the presenter going through that at this time. And the next Thursday, we were planning on not hosting a meeting here just because we've heard that there's quite a few bills that are coming to the committee, and we really want people to have the opportunity. And I want to get around to all three or all four of y'all to make sure we talk about the different bills that are coming to our committee and prioritizing them, okay? So anyway, that's what we'll be doing, my staff and I, next week. And and getting any other ideas for the committee. But we have licensures that we're pulling together. We're pulling together a lot of other things that we've just discussed. But at this time, I'm going to go ahead and gavel out of the meeting at 2:50. Thank you, and happy Valentine's.